The following resource is from lmpc.org, and we're delighted to provide it freely to all. If you feel led to give towards the ministry of Lookout Mountain Presbyterian Church, we welcome you to do so at lmpc.org/give.
It is an honor to be with you this morning. It's an honor to be in this group because I don't know how many. I know I recognize in a lot of faces, but one of our precious memories in coming back on furlough, and I don't remember, on furloughs, I'll put it plural, is to be a part of a group like this. We would come to this group, be fed by Joe's teaching, but also by your prayers. It gave us a point of connection with many of you. So Stephanie started to give me a briefing on what this group is, and I was like, no, wait a second, we know exactly what this group is, and we've been delighted to be a part of it. The topic that I was asked to speak on is the changing face of missions in Europe, wither Europe. And I will be the first to admit that question is impossible to answer in the time allotted. It's just so complex. And then when you talk about Europe, what do you mean by Europe? There are those dying to get into Europe, and there are those dying to get out. We won't mention names, though. So which Europe are we talking about? How do you summarize some of the religious, the sociological trends in Europe, the current state of the church, what we're doing, and all? It's just overwhelming. But what I thought is, in some ways, I am a bit of a wild card at this missions conference. The focus is clearly the UK. And my role in this is perhaps a bit broader. International Director for Europe. So what I thought, what may be helpful to start with, and I think this was the intention by Stephanie, is to get sort of a 30,000-foot view of what's going on in Europe, because what you're going to hear from those on the ground is, you know, obviously much more specific to the UK. So what I'd love to do is to just look at some of the broader trends that are shaping Europe or have shaped Europe over the last 100 years, because they're all important to what's going on in Europe right now. So bear with me. Some of this, you are a missiologically astute congregation. So some of this is going to be a bit redundant. You think we already know that already. But I'd like to drill down beyond some of the generalities to some of the specifics. And one of the things I would love to do is to actually encourage you, thank you for not giving up on Europe. And I'll come back to that, because I'd like to make the case, the argument, as to why I think Europe is strategic in missions, not just regionally, but globally. And so I hope that's an encouragement as you listen to some of these other missionaries. So let's talk about trending. What's trending up? What's trending down? Let me start with the negative. What's trending down? Europe is no longer the center of global Christianity. So this graph, this was actually put together by a missiologist from Scotland, Andrew Walt, and what he's depicting in this is a global shift to the south and the east in global Christianity over the last 100 years. There's a change in the center of gravity in global Christianity. Now, that's probably not new, new news to anybody in this room, I'm guessing. But I want to break that down a little bit further with some of these graphs. And unfortunately, partly got cut off there. Let's dig a little bit deeper into some of those numbers. Now, 100 years ago, imagine this, 100 years ago, two-thirds of Christians lived in Europe. Two-thirds of global Christians lived in Europe, in a place where Christians had been for a millennium. Today, that number is at about 25%. But what about the total number of Christians globally? In the last 100 years, the number of Christians has quadrupled globally. So it's gone from about 160 million, and it gets cut off, to about 2 billion. So Along with global Christianity quadrupling, so is the total population. So here's, if there is a silver lining on this, the percentage of Christians within Europe is actually about the same, about 30 to 35%, or globally, I should say. Now, here's, when you look at these numbers, just to put things in perspective, Nigeria has twice as many Protestants as Germany. The birthplace of the Protestant Reformation. Brazil has twice as many Catholics as Italy. But one of the things, if you look, dig into these numbers, even though Christians are more numerous in the global south, if you go back to that other map, the concentration of Christians is still higher in the north. Why? Because population is greater in the south. So, just to, you know, to unpack some of these numbers. But what about projected growth? As we think in Europe about the next 40 to 50 years, what's the projected growth? And most of these statistics, you'll realize, are from the Pew Research Center. Over the next 40 years, there is projected to be 100 million less Christians in Europe. Islam is expected to see a 63% increase in Europe over the next 40 years. The religiously unaffiliated are to see a 16% increase from 140 to about 162 million. Let me bring it closer to a little bit closer to a recent study that was done in the UK. The study was done 2018, and maybe some of my UK brothers are familiar with this. It's entitled Europe's Adults and Religion. In other words, where's Europe going? Track the young adults. So it was authored by Stephen Bullivant. He's a professor of theology and sociology at St. Mary's University in London. And in this study, and this is just a report on it from The Guardian, the findings indicated that the majority, get this, of 16 to 29-year-olds in 12 European countries are not religiously affiliated anymore. The survey found that the least religious country in Europe is what? What would you guess?
Portugal.
What's that?
Portugal.
No?
Czech.
Ah, did it say it up there? Ah, yeah, that's right. Czech. So with 90... Yeah, that's right. I need to cover that up. 91% of young people saying they have no religious affiliation whatsoever. Between 70 to 80% of young adults in Estonia, Sweden, and Netherlands also associate with no religion whatsoever. The largest population of Christians was found in what European country? Just brainstorming. Not France, but that's not bad. I heard it? Begins with a P.
Poland,
yes. Poland at 83%, followed by Lithuania and Ireland at 59%. So the smallest proportions are found in the Czech Republic or Czech. There's a big debate over that. We won't go into that. But 9%, Sweden at 18%, and Netherlands at 19%. Now, in the UK, since we're focusing on that over this weekend, 7% of young adults identify as Anglican. 10% describe them as Catholics, themselves as Catholics. 6% as Muslims. So in as many as 59% of young people never attend religious services whatsoever. And almost two-thirds would say they never pray. That's the Europe of tomorrow. 16 to 29-year-olds. Based on those findings, here's what Bullivant is quoted in this article is saying, that religion is moribund and Christianity as a default, as a norm, is gone. And probably gone for good. But, he would say, at least for the next 100 years. What do you do with that? So what are some conclusions, some opportunities that I see? Well, one conclusion from all this is stop supporting missionaries to Europe. In fact, I have gotten this from missions committee. Europe is not where the action is. It's not where you're going to get your missionary bang for your buck. So let's go where the Holy Spirit is active. I'll give you another perspective. Reasons to support missions in Europe is because even the atheists want Christians in Europe. If you know this gentleman here, Richard Dawkins, is not exactly a friend of Christianity. Richard Dawkins says, please support missions to Europe. Well, that's not exactly what he said, but something close. He said, before we rejoice at the death throes of this relatively benign Christian religion, you just see the undertones, the sarcasm in his voice, let's not forget Hilaire Belloc's menacing rhyme, always keep a hold of the nurse for fear of finding something worse. There are no Christians, he goes on to say, there are no Christians, as far as I know, blowing up buildings. I'm not aware of any Christian suicide bombers. I'm not aware of any major Christian denomination that believes that the penalty for apostasy is death. I have mixed feelings about the decline of Christianity, insofar as Christianity might be a bulwark against something worse. So even the atheists want Christianity in sort of a roundabout way. One of the most helpful, insightful books, and I would love to hear from you guys what your assessment of the book. One of the most helpful books on missions in Europe, or just the religious situation in Europe, is written by an openly gay Jewish atheist. Douglas Murray has read. Have you guys read The Strange Death of Europe? Fascinating. Book, well worth the read if you want to get a completely different perspective of Europe, religiously speaking. But here's the basic argument of the book. Is he's saying that Europe currently is committing political, sociological suicide. Why? Because, he said, if Europe loses its Christian roots, it'll forfeit Christian fruits. In other words, what he's saying is the baseline, the foundation of Europe, the European culture, tolerance, compassion, and so forth, is based ultimately on a Christian world and life view. And he's saying that the more that Europe loses its Christian roots, it will no longer become a tolerant and compassionate culture. So here is an openly gay, Jewish atheist who is saying, we need Christianity here. It is the very foundation of this culture. And if we expect Europe to remain as it is, open and tolerant, then we cannot let it go. So let me give you some reasons why I think Europe is very strategic. Why I am encouraged by you as a congregation, as a body, who have not given up on sending missionaries to Europe. I'm going to give you just four reasons why I think it's worth your time and money and your prayers to keep sending missionaries to Europe. Reason one: over the last six centuries, most intellectual developments have come from Europe, which influenced the world. Think about it. The Renaissance, the Reformation, the Industrial Revolution, humanism, Marxism, existentialism, and so on. Jeff Fontaine has written an article in a Lausanne publication in which he says this: Europe, the most Christianized of all continents, has also exported atheism, rationalism, humanism, secularism, existentialism, communism, and plain unbelief to the far corners of the world. Alan Pritchard is an organizer of a conference called the Europe Leadership Forum, and he's written a fascinating article which quotes Leslie Newbegin. Does that name mean anything to you? Longtime missionary, India, returned to England. One of the things he writes is, one of the things Leslie Newbegin says is that post-Christian society, that Europe as a post-Christian society is arguably the greatest missiological challenge of our time. So although he spent most of his career in India, he had come to see Europe as even a more challenging mission field. And the difference, these are his words, the difference between Europe and many other places is that is the difference between a pre-pagan culture and a post-pagan culture, which he described as the difference between, and these are his words, the difference between a virgin and a divorcee. So Pritchard's point, Europe has a lot of baggage. It's scorched earth. Most other growth in other areas are societies less touched by modernity. They're pre-modern ground. And what he's arguing is that if we want to have an impact on, and I'll come back to this, to respond to all these movements that have arisen from Europe, we need to understand Europe. We need to understand its roots. None of these is neutral to the gospel. None. Second reason I'll give you is Europe is strategic, is Europe is educating the world. Since 9/11, in particular, the U.S. has restricted a lot of student visas. The result, the U.S. has, and this is from 2012, and to my knowledge, similar to today, the U.S. educates 740,000 foreign students compared to Europe's 1.9 million. We have one child who's studying at the University of Manchester and another child studying at Northwestern in Iowa. And given the cost of education, there's a lot of reason to study in Europe right now, among other things. But that means we need more Christians on university campuses, like St. Andrews. We need more professors in theological colleges. We need more campus outreach ministries. Victor Naka is the MTW International Director for Africa. And one of the things Victor said to me at one point, he said, David, when a PhD from Cambridge speaks in Africa, the room gets very quiet. Third reason, why Europe is strategic. Europe is exporting the world's fastest growing religion worldwide, which is? Not Islam.
Atheism.
Unbelief. By unbelief, I mean a combination of either agnosticism or atheism. A century ago, 90% of the world's unbelievers were Europeans. Now only 10% are Europeans. So while much is being said about God being back on the world scene, Pritchard believes that not enough attention is being given to the worldwide growth of the religion of unbelief. And then lastly, I would argue that Europe is at the... I'll come to that in a second. Europe is at the center of the global battle for the gospel. The gospel's most dangerous opponent right now is not Islam, Hinduism, or Buddhism. It is ultimately European unbelief. If the church in Europe, in word and deed is to be helped, then. Or if the global church is to be helped, then I believe that the antidote needs to be found in Europe's unbelief first. So if we're going to tackle unbelief on a global level, we need to understand unbelief on a European level because that's where it's originated, and that's where it's arguably the strongest. So we need to equip leaders to dismantle the modern objections to the gospel. The defeater beliefs, if you will, as Tim Keller calls it, need to be defeated first in Europe. So rather than walking away from Europe, the global church needs to refocus on Europe, actually is central. I found a helpful illustration that somebody compared the need for missions in Europe to a typical outbreak, of a virus, at the center of a disease control. And what happens when there is some major outbreak of some virus in some remote corner of the globe? What does the CDC do? Well, one of the first things they do is they actually try to figure out where did this virus originate. And then they go back to the center, back to the origin, and they begin to try to find an antidote there. I would argue, if we want to find the global solution or a powerful antidote to the world, to the global unbelief, you need to go back to Europe. And we've got to find the antidote there. And I think in so doing, we'll have a global impact for missions. So I hope that this entire weekend is a study in unbelief. It's a study of what God's doing in Europe so that we begin to have an impact globally on unbelief. Now, that was point one.
Just like your dad.
Yeah. So let me give you one other point. And I'll touch on this, but what I'd love to do is this is more of an appetizer to what I'd love to speak on Sunday on the global phenomena or the European crisis, the refugee crisis. A lot more stories on Sunday, but this is trending up. People are on the move. So numbers are down in Europe, but people are on the move in a very significant way in Europe through refugees and mass migration. Over the last 4 to 5 years, these numbers are actually, are 2017. In the last 5 years, there have been over 2 million refugees, what we call the new Europeans. Just last year alone in Germany, it was 150,000, which is significantly lower than the years before. But what's increasing is the number of deaths. You know, just on the plane ride over here, there is a movie. Has anyone seen it called It Will Be Chaos? Anybody heard of that? I was shocked to see this on, United Airlines Flight 906, as one of the options. It's a documentary film that traces a family and a single from Iran and Syria, two different places, and actually camera footage step by step every part of the journey as they got to Germany. Fascinating. Heartbreaking. It's tough to watch, but if you want to understand the heart and the impact of the refugee crisis on the lives of the new Europeans, those who are now inheriting this new Europe, it's a helpful start. So it's having, and I think will have tremendous impact on the Europe of the future. If you think about it, it is causing a major European identity crisis. And there's an irony to that because most of the refugees are themselves going through an identity crisis. They've lost everything that has been near and dear to them, everything that's defined them, family, culture, everything that brings them comfort. And they're coming to a Europe and actually to a Europe that's going through an identity crisis. Who are we now? In Europe, and as I've described to a number of places, my sense right now in Europe is that Europe is like a salad bowl. It's got all these elements, and somebody just took the bowl and just went, whoosh, and the pieces are just falling all over the place, which is culturally speaking chaos. But for a missionary, it opens all kinds of doors, which is why I say it right now, I would argue, is one of the most exciting times to be a missionary to Europe. There's all kinds of open doors to the gospel, in spite of the entrenched unbelief. So, identity crisis, I'll talk about more of that on Sunday, but conclusions and opportunities. I think one of the things the refugee crisis is doing is it's causing Europeans to re-examine their roots. Secondly, I think it's actually leading to the planting of diaspora churches. Largest church in London is? It's an African church. There are more Africans and Africans worshiping in London than there are Londoners worshiping in London on any given Sunday. Wow. Yeah. So the Afro-Caribbean is another, but in one sense, missiologically, I would so wish that they would move outside of ethnic churches and become much more indigenous or intercultural. But at the same time, those diaspora churches are having an impact everywhere they go in Europe. And one of the other missiological trends, one of the things this is doing is accelerating a process of globalization or, missiologically speaking, we talk about from everywhere to everywhere. In other words, the missiological trends for centuries now has been from the West to the rest, of the world. That's changing. What is happening now is you're having far more missionaries coming from the global South and East to Europe and likewise. There's far more interchange. So one of the things we are trying to do in MTW is respond to that trend and not just assume it's all about us sending missionaries to the world. But how do we become a catalyst? How do we become a part of a group that begins to think more globally? Give you a specific example. Recently I was in Italy meeting with a church planter who was planting churches among refugees. And one of the things I asked him is there any way we can help? What sort of resources do you need? And he said, you know what we need here? We actually need African theologians to teach the African refugees. You know what I'm able to do? I'm able to talk to the international director of Africa and say, do you have any theologians there that would be willing to come? Because those are the missionaries that are actually needed here in Europe. One of the things we're trying to do is to find sites, what we would call, I guess the trendy term is an ecosystem, a place, cities, which have multiple outreaches within an area, like a seminary or outreach to refugees, integration houses, church plants, where they are interconnected and they are willing to think globally and say, you know, we have these resources, but we lack these resources, and to find other ecosystems globally, and we begin to think, to share resources. It's mind-boggling. But I think one of the things the refugee crisis is doing is sort of accelerating that trend and changing the paradigm in missions. I would say in Europe right now, one of the strategic initiatives that I find most strategic is a movement called intercultural church planting. And when you hear that, you think, okay, I know what that means. What it's not, let me explain what it's not, is not international church planting, which typically means English-speaking. It's also not multicultural church planting, which typically means all cultures are kind of mixed in and there is no base culture. Intercultural churches are churches who, in another term for it is mono-multicultural. The desire is that there is a monoculture. There is at least 50% that comes from a base culture. So you don't lose the Germanness of a German church or the Scottishness of a Scottish church. But there is an intentional movement within the church to then integrate the immigrants and refugees. So it ends up being about 50-50. And it does two things. One, it will change the body, the base culture long term. But it also helps those immigrants and refugees integrate not only into the body of Christ, but also within their cities. That movement within Europe is called the Intercultural Church Planting Network. And we've got works right now in Athens, in Frankfurt, Berlin. We're looking at northern Italy, as well as Belgium. And I'd love to do a whole lot more. So I'm going to stop there. My time is up. But I hopefully that gives you sort of some of the things trending in Europe right now. I'm sure there are more that you're going to hear about, but I think it's changing the face of missions in Europe in a very exciting way. I will stop there.
First, I asked for a corneal transplant. You've removed my eyes. Put them back in. This is enormously helpful. Do you want to ask questions of David or Emma before we spend some time in prayer? Please.